It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome back to Grassroots Marketing here on CannabisRadio.com. I'm here with the leading provider of premium medicinal cannabis genetics dedicated to reintroducing the world to the best purebred cannabis strains. And joining me right now on the program, I'm happy to welcome the founder and CEO of Flower Power Genetics, James Krause. James, thanks for being on with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And as we get started, there's a great announcement that your team has put together about securing a pending utility patent and introducing a new cannabis hybrid called Atom. So real quickly, just what we're learning about this so far is that it combines the genetics of a 1970s Afghan indica and a 1980s Jamaican sativa, and it's expected to go ahead and transform the cultivation industry of cannabis with superior yield, disease resistance, genetic stability, and climate versatility. Tell me about Atom.
Sure. Atom is a hybrid that we've created from vintage seeds that we had stored in cold storage for over 30 years. The genetics are acquired through countries of origin and as well as top breeders in the 80s and the 90s, such as Neville. In this particular case, the Jamaican and Afghan are Neville's versions of these things. So these are Neville's genetics at 1 cups that we went ahead and brought the seeds out of cold storage. They're still viable seeds after all these years. And we created a patent between a sativa and an indica.
Now, you also mentioned here in the press release about how the integration of hemp into cannabis breeding has led to the erosion of pure cannabis genetics. And that's reduced yield, increased susceptibility to diseases, and excessive hybridization has further diminished the genetic diversity of commercial cannabis, complicating efforts for farmers to produce high quality yields across various climates. So your team went through meticulous cold storage to go and create Atom. So tell me about the process about, you know, the extra work that's being put into this and, you know, why the quality is so important based on the process that you're going through here.
Originally, you know, cannabis originally had cannabis sativa and cannabis indica, mm-hmm. and you have ruderalis and hemp. Sativa is a tropical plant, originally only grew in the tropics. It's not light dependent. It's always 12 hours of dark, 12 hours of light in the tropics. It can deal with hot humidity. And for, you know, well over 100 years, anyone that got the bag seed couldn't replicate the same type of product that they bought that the seed came from. So you couldn't grow Thai genetics in the United States or other places outside the tropics. Originally, sativas were produced in 2 regions of the world, and in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand. And the other region they produced cannabis sativa originally was in the Caribbean. So you had Colombia, Mexico, Jamaica. And so all flower came from those regions and they were all tropical plants. The flower is smaller and looks different. And the indica was produced in the Middle East So Afghanistan, Pakistan, Lebanon, Morocco, Turkey, Nepal, and India all produced indica. And indicas were all consumed as hashish. They have CBD in the green part of the plant. So when the people tried to smoke it as flower, they got the quote couch lock. The workaround was to make hash out of it. So you had two distinct types of cannabis plants that people use for medication. One's the tropical flower plant, grows in the tropics, and one's the indica, grows in the Middle East in a desert. So it's cold desert, hot tropicals. What we did is we crossed the tropical original version of the plant with the indica plant to produce something in a hybrid, the Atom, which can withstand, has the ability to grow in hot, cold, humid, or dry. That's what we did. As far as the hemp was never a medicinal plant. Hemp is not a Schedule I plant, or wasn't a Schedule I plant. It didn't have any medicinal value. And in fact, 360,000 species of plants on Earth, only two produced the cannabinoids that we use for medicine, which was the sativas and the indicas. When you take a plant that's a medicinal plant, we'll give it a 10 medicinal value, and you cross it with a hemp plant, has zero drug value, you end up with F1s of drug value of 5. So all your seeds become 5s, not 10s. The second generation, 25% of your seeds will be dominant, hemp, and zero drug value. 25% will be recessive, but they can only have the drug value of the parents that create them, which were 5s, not the 10s that originally existed. Then you're going to have 50% that are dominant recessive or recessive dominant. With those, you're going to have a drug value of 2.5. So in your second generation, you went from a drug value plant of a sativa indica had 10, and it went down in the second generation to zeros, fives, or 2.5s. At that point, people started concentrating cannabis. And at that point, they started trying to breed the THC back up because they thought that's the component that gets them the high. But there's 150 cannabinoids. And once you mix hemp in, and again, it's a dominant trait of hemp not to give you medicine, like all plants. So as soon as you add hemp in, it starts to erode the medicinal value of the plant. And that began in the late 70s and early 80s in California.
Now, I want to just make sure I wrap my head around this. So you're crossing the Afghan indica made to grow well in cold and dry climates, the Jamaica sativa for humid and hot climates. And these genetics, so it's a all season genetic. And then what's the best way to grow? Are we looking at, I mean, are we saying that, you know, this could be grown outdoors consistently and without any hemp derivatives in it, that it also creates a more quality and less pesticide, less issues with any contamination to that genetic?
Exactly. You can grow it. And well, for example, you could take the F1 Atom seeds and take it to somewhere, I don't know, like Maine, and you would plant the seeds, and they have the ability to grow in cold and hot and humid and dry. So the F1 Atom seeds will grow perfectly suited in that environment. But if you went to acclimatize it to your farm in Maine and you're growing outside in the summer, you would grow the Atom seeds. And then once the seeds grow, you collect the seeds of the and make F2s. Then you grow the F2s the second season. And then they're going to start to break up. You're going to have plants that have the ability to be grown in, say, cold and dry, cold and humid, hot and dry, hot and humid. So you find the plants that suit your environmental conditions. And that's the plants that you choose to continue to breed with. And then with selective breeding, you can acclimatize these genetics specifically for any part of the world that has any humidity, dry, hot, or cold. So the advantage of having these seeds is you can acclimatize it. They've been trying to acclimatize California genetics to places like Colombia, and they're not able to do it. Once the rules in acclimatization that what you're trying to achieve has to be present in one of the two parents. And if you're trying to grow cannabis into the tropics, you need to have the DNA ability of one of the two parents to already grow in the tropics to be successful. You can't, you can't, you can't acclimatize something. It's like trying to say, I'm going to take a mutt and breed into a pure poodle again. You can't do it. Once it's mixed with hemp, there's no one doing it. Besides, the hemp brought all kinds of diseases with it, like the Dud disease. Are you familiar with the hemp latent virus?
I'm not, no.
So in 1987, they had hops had a disease that made the hops turn bitter, and it became into hemp latent viroid. So the hop latent viroid crossed into its cousin plant, the hop plant, the hemp plant. And at that point, it's the hemp latent viroid. So that, and then California discovered hemp latent viroid back in 2012. And the hemp latent viroid, what it does to cannabis plants is it reduces yields, it stunts the plants, you get lower yields. But it has another thing it does. It actually takes away the psychoability of the plant, meaning that you could get cannabis that, say, tests at 30 THC, you consume it, and you feel like no kind of effects. You feel no medicine, no high, and you wonder why. I just bought this. It's been tested in a lab. It's got THC in it. Why do I not feel anything? It's got Dud disease. This is an RNA virus embedded in the DNA. It's not curable. And it's in Dark Heart Nurseries tested over 200,000 samples in California, and it's in over 90% of the samples. So you're dealing with this epidemic that actually takes away the medicinal value of the plant. And it gives you the false test of THC because it'll test for the molecule, but it doesn't, the medicine is not working.
Now I want to get this point across too. For those growers, we've always had the debate of indoor versus outdoor. So for those that want to have the greenhouse, control the amount of water that's being put onto the plant, the irrigation system, control the lighting with the LED lighting, and control the climate. For those that always feel like if you go outdoor, the threat of contamination, the compliance issues that can come behind it, the testing, all that, because, you know, even though you might be able to say that you can grow these genetics, these Adam genetics in cold or hot climates, humid or dry, the other part is that, you know, in some climates, it might be variable. And sometimes, maybe some years, the environment will change a little bit differently. What do you say about that for those that would make the change to outdoor because these genetics would work so well to grow?
I think that either case, that my genetics will work for outdoor as well as indoor. It has that ability to adapt. And as far as, you know, there's different aspects. I think if you grow inside, it's easier to control the environment and have more consistent environment and reduce the use of pesticides by not have outside. You can't go outside enough in the woods or into a field and eliminate all the bugs. You're going to have bugs, you know.
Well, so I'm asking if the genetics are resistant to some of those contaminants.
We've done some studies and we've shown resistance to powder mildew and some of these other issues that are affecting modern genetics.
Because that's the part. If there are some outdoor growers that feel like, well, if this can go ahead and pass a test of yeast, mold, bacteria, any kind of particular viruses, any other things that could come in from the climate that could help to deviate from it and take away and contaminate in some way, shape, or form. If there is less risk, then I can see where outdoor growers could take these genetics and opt to go ahead and do outdoor. That's the whole idea. If people feel like they don't have to go build a greenhouse, they don't have to go to the whole time-sensitive controlled environment, and it grows different. What about the growth cycle of it as well because of, you know, I mean, the amount of irrigation you can put into it, what sunlight or what kind of arid conditions you have, you know, what's the change in between having these genetics indoor, outdoor grown in terms of their yield and in terms of how long it takes to grow?
Well, our genetics grow and we have a lot shorter turnaround on our cycles. Uh-huh. Our harvest is 60 days. I think modern genetics typically fall between 70 and 75 days.
Wow.
So ours is a shorter time period to harvest. You know, it's again, ours is the genetics that humans have created for only the purpose of medicine. There's nothing but pure medicinal genetics DNA and our genetics. So we don't have a lot of the problems with the disease, and we have higher yields, you know, much higher medicinal value. I'll give you an example. I've given samples out to a lot of people. I don't want to name drop.
Right.
So I'm not going to. Including, you know, influencers and celebrities. Pretty much everyone that has tried our cannabis has said, and the 90% that have tried it said it's the best they ever had in their entire life.
Wow.
And when I asked, what do you think the THC number is? They guess 60, 70, 80, 90, you know, and we're talking, you know, people, I don't want to name drop, but definitely, you know, they believe the medicinal value is a lot higher. And also when they consume our product, the high or the medicine lasts about 4, 5, 6 hours. And the typical dosage is 1 or 2 puffs off a pre-roll. That's all they smoke. They usually stop after the second hit and say, I don't need any more. And usually in the first hit, get some Medicaid. Literally, they'll do the first hit and they'll be, I feel like I'm on mushrooms. I'm like, no, that's what cannabis used to be, but it hasn't been that in a long, long time.
So the other thing too is that all, in the genetics that you have here, there's also one thing that you made very important is the potency and the amount of THCV, that particular phytocannabinoid that's being found in these genetics. Tell me the importance of why there's of whether there's THCV in this flower, in these genetics, why is so important to have so much, the benefits of it.
Well, THCV has been known to help. Well, it's believed to help with diabetes. It has appetite suppressant properties. So when you consume the flower that has the THCV, you don't really get munchies. As an example of that, I went to this nice restaurant and I ordered in California, and I ordered a nice meal. And while they were preparing a meal, I went out and tried a little with my partner and came back in. I didn't really feel like eating. So I just got all the food wrapped up, took it home. Huh. So it literally doesn't make you get the munchies. So I think that's a good benefit. So I think that would help with, you know, people that are trying to have weight loss and with diabetes. And it also has been shown to help with bone growth. And some perhaps they believe it could help with Parkinson's. So we're going to do some research on this. Our genetics have high THCV because it goes back to when they added the hemp into the genetics back in the late 70s and the 80s. That when you add the hemp into it, you know, every cannabinoid is not related. So if you have when you have 25% dominant that maybe not have THC might have CBD. So, but you have to, you would have to track all the genetics. Once you add hemp, you would have to check all the seeds that you grow to make sure it has all the cannabinoids that were originally in there. And they didn't do that. So that's what happened. It's the medicinal value has been diminished once you add the hemp in.
Now, one of the things that's very important, I want to make sure to hit this point across with the listeners here, is that you also talk about how when there's the average of cost of cannabis per pound, that with the genetics you make a flower power genetics, that price can be significantly higher, as much as maybe 4 times the amount. Talk to me about that. Why there'll be a higher cost quotient towards what your genetics offer compared to others?
Historically, Neville's genetics, we're saying in 1995, 1990 mm-hmm. or so, in that period, even in the 80s, any high quality Neville genetics or even high quality genetics, and included in California, typically sold $400, $500, even $600 per ounce. The second is that the medicine, you know, our medicine lasts, if modern stuff lasts 30 or 40 minutes after you smoke a pre-roll, and you smoke 2 puffs of a pre-roll of ours, and the medicine lasts for 4 to 6 hours, it has a longer effect. So you add up these different effects. You look at historical data. You could think of it, instead of thinking one thing is equal to another thing, you have to look at if you could extract the medicine out of, you know, modern cannabis, and you could extract the medicinal value of our cannabis, it has a higher level of medicinal value.
Wow. So let's go and take people to the website, flowerpowergenetics.com. And, you know, besides the Atom, which we talked about extensively here on this episode, but there's been a lot more you've done into that. Also want to make the point that you also use third-party lab testing for those, for the products you also create, the genetics that you also have. And your collection has well over 1,200 well-preserved cannabis seeds from the pre-2000 era, and you have many research possibilities, potential medical benefits of this rare genetic collection. One of the things I want to ask about is, because of the recent announcement for the DEA to reschedule cannabis, you know, we've talked about the possibilities of more research to explore the medical benefits of cannabis and these particular seeds and strains that you are working on at Flower Power. Talk about the fact of what changes now with this distinction, if there is a possibility for your team or to collaborate with others on more research on these genetics.
I think that the rescheduling is a great thing. You know, I think it should be the ATFC. It should be alcohol, tobacco, firearms, cannabis. Mm-hmm. I don't think it should be scheduled at all. Schedule 3, I think it's going to allow the industry to operate more like a regular business. And I think that's a good outcome for us. As far as the collection, the 1,200 seeds, it's not quite accurate. It's 1,200 packs of seeds. So each seed pack can have 20 seeds, or a Thai land rice might have 50 seeds in it. So I have 1,200 seed packs, and each one has a bunch of seeds in it. Probably the collection is like 9,000 plus seeds that are all original from that time period. I bought Neville's entire seed collection. So everything that Neville had, I bought a seed pack of.
It's a lot of work you're doing right now so far, but what can you tell me about the research process, what you've done so far? What kind of resources do you have towards putting together, looking into all these different seeds and researching these genetics?
Right now we're looking at the first utility patent that we applied for.
Right.
And that once I have that and go through the process, I can take the template, and then these other seeds I have, I'm just going to start growing other seeds.
All right.
And then you fill in the template for the first, the other patent. And now I'm just going to start doing patents. Basically our goal is to, I really don't want to get in this space of producing cannabis and things like that. There's businesses that do that. What they need right now, all cannabis industry is basically built on brands, and they're all sharing the same open source genetics.
Mm-hmm.
What I offer is product independence. So we license out our genetics to certain partnerships, and right, because of the higher yields and should be a premium price, they were able to double their revenue or double their profits. And we get a royalty based on that. And so my goal is to, and then also our genetics have been extinct for 25 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody has anything close to what we have. I've been to the Triangle in California. Nobody there said they've even had anything remotely close to the quality of what we have offer. And so therefore you're not going to have to compete selling the same commodity as the underground market. You'll have a commodity that's much superior that the underground market does not have access to. So you'll be able to, you know, not compete with them. That's what we offer, is product independence. I give brands the product or the IP or the secret sauce that they've been needing. That's what our goal is, to license out that way. And then I just stay growing more Neville genetics and making more patents and license them out. That's where the plan is.
Now, I want to just ask one more thing about, we send people over to flowerpowergenetics.com. And as we do that, what would you like people to go and do when they go to the website?
Oh, I'd like them to get interested in what cannabis used to be, and that it was lost, and that we are here to bring it back. So it's not, you know, to learn about the history of cannabis. You know, it's really difficult out there for me. So and for me as a consumer, the modern product is not very good. And, you know, also it doesn't seem right to me when people are advertising they have cannabis sativa or indica, but DNA wise, if you test all modern cannabis, it's about 70-80% hemp. If you look at gelato or any of these strands, it's on Phylos Bioscience. almost all everything modern. I couldn't find anything modern that was pure sativa or indica. Nothing. And there's databases. I mean, DNA has been done. No one has anything pure other than what we have.
Right. Fantastic. Again, been here with James Krause, founder and CEO of Flower Power Genetics. Flowerpowergenetics.com is the website. And thank you for giving us all this information about this breakthrough hybrid, and congratulations. Best of luck on future research.
Thank you.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.